ゴジラが近づいております。警備隊の指示に従って避難してください。
Live images here in the studio.
Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. I don't know what it is.
Welcome to Tokyo Lives, a giant monster podcast where the hosts truly believe that one day our gods will rise from the mountain and avenge us all. I'm Cameron.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Rob.
That's a good one. I like that.
It was good, right? I think it worked well. As I'm sure you could tell from my cryptic intro sequence, today we watched Daimajin! And I had never actually seen it before.
Nobody at this table had seen it before.
Yeah, I saw a trailer of it when I rented some movie, and like I sent you guys a message like, oh wow, have you guys ever heard of this movie? And immediately Cameron was like, I saw the ending of it.
Yeah, I've seen the ending.
Yeah, I'd seen it in a, we have a store called Fry's up in Austin, you guys know.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, like I saw the 3-pack of it on Blu-ray, and I was like, it was right when the podcast was starting back when I was with Coleman, so I actually thought about buying it. Yeah. And I was like, oh man, maybe I should buy this because we'll probably have to cover it someday. And then I was like, it's a little too expensive.
Really to worry about that.
And then of course when you said it, I went back to Fry's immediately. I was like, no.
it's gone. I did buy it off of Amazon. Yeah. But as of this recording, still not here. So that's a little worrisome.
Here's how that played out a month ago. Hey guys, I really want to do Daimajin. Oh cool, well we can't find a copy to buy at Fry's, could you just buy it online? Yeah, sure, totally, I'm on it. 2 weeks later. Hey, Cameron, did you get Daimajin yet? Oh, I'm going to order it right now. Don't worry. I'll get this set up, get this squared away. Earlier this week. Hey, Cameron, did you get the thing?
It's on its way.
It's coming in.
It was on its way. Hot. I had gotten it.
Fortunately.
There's one important piece of backstory. I have a job.
He has a life.
And that's fair.
Yeah, and at this job, I'm learning an entirely new skill set.
But anyway, we got to watch it.
We didn't get to watch it.
But first, before we get to it, we got a couple things to talk about. Should be a pretty
exactly
short
two things. To
exactly
talk about.
Two things. So first thing is our Kaiju Incoming contest is about to end. But it is still running hot. Rob has the winners for the last few.
So, we are coming down to the wire. This next Kaiju Incoming, I guess currently happening
when this episode releases,
Is going to be the last one of 2017.
Yep, that one right over there.
It's been a good year. It's been a year.
It's been a year.
It's been 365.
It's been a great year for the podcast.
Yeah. It's gonna a full year of. I think we'll celebrate that soon.
Yeah, we're gonna have something for that. But anyway,
but first, we were besieged by Baragon, the cutest kaiju, because his big old floppy ears.
Yep, he came over and was like, "Get out of here, you."
Over in the Twitterverse, Weapon Gojira X, Rikaku Sai Crow, Eric J. Schuster, sorry if I butchered your last name, Kyoe Toshi, and Edward III identified that beastie. And then over on Facebook, Rick, Mitchell, and Graydon were able to spot this. I don't have a good pun for this.
He's subterranean, I think, is actual, like, the subterranean kaiju, I think it's
he's kind of like a potato. Maybe we just like, him
this.
He's like a big old dog.
This terrifying tuber.
Ooh. That's really good.
All right.
Cut all this out. Put, so it sounds like I say it.
TM.
And then we were besieged by the Hanna-Barbera Godzilla. Weird that this universe has all access to all other dimensions.
Weird.
But hey. Here at the Tokyo Live Studios, we are beset upon the pinnacle point of kaiju interlaced realities.
It's a cross section. It's like Earth in the DCU.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're
very center of that multiverse.
On Twitter, Edward III Weapon Gojira X, Rikaku Sai Crow, and Kyoi Toshi were able to spot that. There's not even a really good one for...
Two-dimensional Titan of... Ooh. I just said Terror for the Terror.
But he's not really a Terror, though.
He's not really a two-dimensional...
Of a voice going... Because he doesn't have a roar.
He's two-dimensional. He's flat. Dude. He's a cartoon.
He also has fire breath. And they could...
And laser eyes.
And laser eyes. Oh, that's right. Yeah. He has laser eyes. And then over on Facebook, Rick pointed that out. By the way... Safe journeys, Rick, if you're listening.
I know he is currently over in Japan, hanging out for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Cool times. So those are those guys. Congratulations to all of you. The vote will start early next week. Yes. So be checking your Facebook messages for a link. And we will announce on our website the two episodes for Fan Month shortly after that. So look forward to January, where we do 2 months decided by you all.
Oh boy.
2 months decided by two movies decided
by you all. Two whole months.
Everything we do in those 2 months will be dictated by you, the listeners. Don't forget to let me shower, please.
We've got some real, real spicy meatballs to pick from.
It's going to be great. We only have one piece of news this week. And actually, for our next recording, we're going to go ahead and warn you right now, we probably will have no news because Christmas is here and we're having to push these episodes real close together.
Sorry, that's mostly on me. I'm going to be out of town for a while.
It's not just your fault. I mean, we all have stuff to do on Christmas.
I mean, it's mostly your fault.
I'll like take the burden of
75-80% your fault.
I don't want to completely absolve you here.
So this week we actually do have a big piece of news to go over. But next week, just to keep in mind, we're going to do something in the news section. We don't know what yet, but there's not going to be any big news in theory. But now I'm saying that something crazy is going to happen. Toho's going to announce the next live-action Godzilla movie. They're going to drop a King of the Monsters trailer on us for no reason out of nowhere or something.
And they'll announce that I got the part.
Godzilla. So for the news this week, it's kind of an on the fringe thing, but I don't really care. We're going to talk about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of little clips leading up to the trailer release, but before the day before the trailer released, we got a nifty little behind the scenes look at the making of the film, which actually I feel like made that trailer better, because looking at it with knowing the things that you got in the behind-the-scenes featurette made you realize a lot of things about the trailer itself, and was later confirmed by Colin Trevorrow, the director of Jurassic World, producer of this movie. What did you guys think of the trailer? Let's start with the trailer, guys.
You want to go?
I want to go.
You look really happy. Cameron looks all excited.
There's a lot of animatronics. Like, to the point that I do not care what the story is actually going to be. I don't care who's in it. They could have Chris Pratt replaced by somebody else halfway through the movie. I wouldn't even notice. The animatronics look so good and so cool.
Yeah.
And, man, it's just knowing that a lot of these things are physical things on set that the actors had to interact with and react to, and it's
also the set crew had to interact with and get that slime up.
Behind the scenes with the KY jelly.
Come in, we gotta re-slime the teeth.
Grease them up.
Grease up those chompers.
That is something that is like. I posted onto our Twitter and Facebook about the animatronics from the behind the scenes clip, but like there's so many of them. We know of at least three big ones in the behind the scenes feature, and I'm sure there's more. I've actually heard a lot of the animatronics that maybe we didn't get to see are actually animatronics with CG overlays on top of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little baby Blue is apparently an animatronic.
Baby Blue looks
that
great.
He's interacting with, and then like it's got CG over top of it to give it the eye animations and stuff like that. So
it's a little BB-8 that rolls in there. They've photoshopped a raptor on top of it.
Yeah, they're getting a lot of miles out of that prop. Good for them.
They really are.
Kyle, do you want to talk about the other very, very niche and nerdy thing that we're excited about?
Okay, well, wait, which one?
Big Bar.
Big Bar Bar.
The Baryonyx. I was trying to give him a cute name. I should have just called him Barry. What's wrong with
him?
If you had said Barry, I'd be like, oh, Big Barry. Yeah.
Baryonyx.
So there are two major new dinosaurs in this. Well, one of them's
a giant rock snake.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Baryonyx. Not at all.
That's in there,
it's a Pokemon joke.
Anyway, there are two big dinosaurs that are the villainous dinosaurs of this movie, supposedly. The first is the Baryonyx, which is really, really cool. He's in the trailer. He's the creature or the dinosaur that's roaring at them with the lava flowing behind them. It's a really nice shot. And then the Indoraptor, which we haven't seen yet, which is supposed to be like they took the I-Rex and just like really did some more tweaking on his genetics and made him smaller. So he's like a little bit bigger than a Velociraptor.
Man, what a good idea.
It's just, it's interesting to me.
I mean, like for the, like in canon, oh, the geneticists. Great idea,
so
guys.
So great, quote unquote. I'm reserving my judgment on the Indoraptor because the I-Rex really was kind of one of the least favorite things that I about Jurassic World for me. But I mean, that's something I can talk about when we talk about that movie later on. But,
you know, the one thing,
yeah,
I really wish they had just gone a whole hog and made a Gauss.
Go full Atlantean with this thing.
The terrible geneticist from Atlantis. It's B.D. Wong.
Henry Wu is from Atlantis. Got it. All right.
The island's sinking.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, as we've kind of said a couple times, the plot of this movie seems to be, or at least the beginning part of the plot, seems to be that Isla Nublar, the island from Jurassic Park and Jurassic World, is becoming volcanically active again. Now, this is something that is very interesting because in the movies, they never talk about the fact that Isla Nublar is volcanic. In the books, it's a main thing. Mm-hmm. Like, they talk about the whole chain of islands that Sorna and Nublar are both volcanic. So it's just interesting they're bringing that into the movie at this point. But it's really cool because it brings up the like, what rights do these animals have? That's kind of the driving force of this movie.
What do we do with these things that we made?
Yeah, we made these creatures. And, like, in theory, we were just going to leave them alone and let them just be, it would be another Isla Sorna, like another island with dinosaurs on it.
Yeah.
They're just living their lives. But the volcano is going to go off and kill them all. So, Claire, I think her name is Bryce Dallas Howard's character, creates a group of people that are fighting for the rights of the dinosaurs, very much like, you know, organizations like PETA and stuff like that, except they actually do something.
So they actually do something. I'm calling you out, PETA.
Please don't kill us, PETA. Don't kill the podcast.
PETA, come for me, PETA. I've had beef with you for a long
Cameron
time.
Cameron said that?
Cameron Hakla.
No.
DM me for my address.
Edit the Hakla out. I'm going to go.
Anyway, it's an interesting route to take. I had no idea what route they were going to take with the sequel.
With the title Lost Kingdom, I was kind of like, oh, the humanity's going to be Lost Kingdom. So was I was thinking, but the idea that it's the...
It's
kingdom
the island. The kingdom is fallen. Is the kingdom itself? Yeah. Like that is the kingdom that is falling.
I like that.
So like, yeah, it's interesting. The trailer itself, I wouldn't say it's the best edited together trailer in the world. I think that there's some wonky stuff with the trailer in itself. I think that there's a lot of effects that aren't finished yet.
Yeah.
But one of the coolest things about the trailer that a lot of people don't realize. So a lot of people saw the trailer and instantly started complaining about it, saying, you spoiled the end of the movie. How could you do that?
I was going to make that my troll response and like lead into that and be
sorry,
like,
my bad.
Oh, I was really upset how they showed the whole movie and then let you correct me. But let's just...
I stole your joke. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Snatch that goof.
But anyway, so everything in the...
goof? I said goof.
Yeah, no, that was good. I like it.
No, this was your goof, and he snatched the goof.
God. Anyway, the trailer is literally the first hour of the movie. There is nothing in that trailer that is beyond the first hour. Now, they didn't say that this footage and the behind-the-scenes stuff is from within the first hour, but just the main release trailer. So all of you people that saw the trailer and were worried that the shot with the T-Rex roaring, with the volcano exploding in the background, was like... the climax of the movie.
No,
it is not.
From what it looks
it's
like,
the end of the second act.
Yeah,
what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So the T-Rex inside the truck clearly has to take place after that scene as well, because it's not on the island as far as I can tell. Why would the T-Rex be in the back of a truck on the island? There's also a shot in the trailer of like the dinosaurs inside like a barge thing with I think the island blowing up in the background as well.
Yeah.
So like, a lot of the dinosaurs do get off. I'm sure Blue does as well, because Blue's coming back. One of the more popular characters from Jurassic World.
Blue.
I just hope they save that ankylosaur.
Yeah.
Little guy dropped in the water.
Oh,
he can't swim very well.
Yeah.
He's trying.
He's got short, stubby legs, and he weighs a billion pounds.
We also see Ian Malcolm briefly in the trailer. Yeah,
Jeff Goldblum himself.
Yeah. Supposedly that is the only scene with him, though. Unfortunately, it is supposed to just be a cameo, like him interviewing with the committee that's deciding what to do. I guess.
Who are the other
Dallas Bryce Howard and Chris Pratt?
No, from the first one.
Alan Grant?
Yeah.
Sam Neill?
Yeah, Sam Neill.
He's not coming back in this one. Although it would be great, since they did Ian Malcolm in this one, it would be cool if in the last Jurassic World they brought both of them back and had them actually have interaction with dinosaurs at the end.
That'd be
especially
nice.
If that's supposed to be the end of like the... If they're going to end the franchise with like this being another trilogy,
yeah,
like that would be really cool to have those two come back just for the last movie and interact with... Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt's character, because we all know they're not going to die
in
this movie. But I mean, like I said, the trailer wasn't the best edited, but the thing is like if you look at the shots and look at the like the context of what's going on and what it could mean for the story of the movie as a whole, we may have something really cool. And it's J.A. Boyana, I think is how you say his name, the guy who did Monster Calls. Like that movie was fantastic and really good with like the tension and like thriller aspects, even though it's like a almost like a storybook story almost.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like in the behind the scenes clip, you see a lot of shots that weren't in the trailer that definitely had that thriller horror feeling that the first Jurassic Park had at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that we're still going to get like, there's a lot of elements that we don't even get from this trailer. And I think they're going to keep those hidden until maybe right before release. If they even show them, they may just let it ride on Jurassic World's $1 billion box office and it'd be fine.
I mean, I like the much more, because it seems like it's a nice mix, at least from the trailer, of you get that, you know, suspense. Like they show that there's going to be both.
Yeah.
It's an action movie. There's volcanoes exploding. There's running. Awkward flailing arm running and there's, you know, there's a lot of action stuff, but then you get like the little tiny creepy moments of like the what's the guy, Barry, was that the one that came out of the tunnel when the lava
Baryonyx.
Just like him coming through and just seeing his head and maw opening up as he starts to like
roar
as
new
as he's being lit by the lava like flowing from the top of the building.
There's a lot just like so cool, spooky.
He looks so good.
I love it. I'm really excited.
The like I said, the shots and everything inside the trailer look really good, and I think that's what I wanted to see. And I wanted to get the general concept of what the movie is going to be about. And I think them doing this kind of reverse Lost World thing, where they're going there to save the dinosaurs instead of trying to prevent people from taking them away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's interesting. That's cool. Like, also just in general, like, okay, so they're going there to save the dinosaurs. What are they going to do with the dinosaurs after they get them off of the island?
I mean, this would be neat if that led into kind of what my theory was for this one. Like, because I was like, oh, it's going to be like set, you know,
in the future
mm-hmm. in the mainland, and dinosaurs are starting to like, you know,
show up,
become a problem. You know,
like they're
Ghostbusters,
starting, like,
but with dinosaurs.
They have no natural enemies or in the environment. So
except for bullets.
Those are
natural.
Well, I mean, even then.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of bullets.
But yeah, so they just start taking over.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Like, that would actually be a really good way to end the trilogy.
That's what I was thinking, you know, that would be a good
last movie.
It's a good setup for something that I just realized I've always wanted to see, which is an elderly woman wakes up to find her rose gardens being eaten by an ankylosaur.
And she's trying. I have a book for you to read.
She's like, stop that.
Because that actual exact scene happens in a book that I love and want to see a movie made of it.
What?
It's called Footprints of Thunder.
Me and my
ankylosaur. It's not the one you think. It's different, but I'll let you borrow it. I have it upstairs.
Footprints of Thunder.
Anyway.
Kaiju Book Club movie.
The Jurassic World trailer looked great. I think it's a good start. I think the biggest thing, the movie doesn't release until June 22nd of next year, I believe. Mm. So like we got this trailer literally 6 months ahead, more than 6 months, like 6.5 months. So all that CG that looked good is only going to look better by the end of it. And with the animatronics being used too, we're not even over relying on the CG. So that means there's less CG shots, which means they can spend all their time and effort on those CG shots that we have.
Yeah.
I think we could end up being like getting something really good.
Next year could potentially be a very good movie year.
I mean, it's going to be a busy movie year for us.
Because we're getting Black Panther in February, and that's going to blast me into another universe.
And then we got Pacific Rim, then we got Rampage now, because that's on our radar after that first trailer.
We're technically going to have to talk about that movie.
What movie?
What movie?
Ready Player Bullet.
No, we weren't talking about Red Bullet.
Listen, I mean, there's a lot of
We will talk about that movie in a new section of the podcast if they actually use Mechagodzilla. If they do, like at the end of the book where Mechagodzilla shows up and the Dragonzord, I think is there.
Do you
like,
think
it's just Mechagodzilla and the Megazord or something?
Here's the thing. Probably.
Saban would probably be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Just give me
Toho's
money.
Not going to
let
it
happen. There's no way Toho is going to. Yeah.
Maybe Toho will save us.
As much as I want to see a fully CGI Kiryu, because it is Kiryu in the end of the book,
yeah.
I would love to see a fully CGI, really cool animated Kiryu.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think. Yeah, I think we'll get
a knockoff. I think it'll be like a robot dinosaur that's like all.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think we're going to get Kiryu. But yeah. But we'll see. Maybe we'll talk. We're not going to do a full episode on it. First of all, definitely falls into the category of a movie with a giant monster in it, if there is one. But anyway, next year is going to be really busy for us. We will be covering Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I think we have all kind of come to an agreement on that.
Oh, yeah.
So look forward to more trailers and stuff from us, articles about that stuff. And we'll probably give a little hint out right here. We're probably going to do something similar like we did for Kong this year for Jurassic World next year. And we're also going to have, I'm definitely going to go ahead and spoil this for the audience as well. The members of the cast that are new this year that didn't get a chance to talk about Pacific Rim 1 will have some sort of opportunity to talk about Pacific Rim. I haven't exactly figured out how I want to do that, whether it's going to be an article or let you guys do kind of like a mini cast where it's just like maybe you and Cameron or if Marissa wants to join you three where I'm not involved and you guys just like take 20 minutes to talk about the first movie.
If there's no other news on that episode, we can just have our news segment replaced by me and Cameron just yelling about how hype we are about
the
movie.
But I mean, keep in mind, next year, as much as it's big for movies, we do have the impending release of King of the Monsters.
That's true.
I feel like we're going to get a lot of stuff leading to Comic-Con next year, and then we're going to get a trailer from Comic-Con. So yeah. we're going to be... And we've got Monster Planet 2.
Yeah.
The sequel to the anime as well as next year. So, and our release of Monster Planet. So anyway,
anywho,
we have a movie about a different kind of giant creature thing to talk about.
Our first ever magically based kaiju gotten into.
I mean, D-Wars, but it was a physical thing.
It was a creature though.
It was a biological creature. This is a statue with a ghost in it.
I mean,
you know what?
Gamera is kind
technically,
of. I mean, he uses mana as fuel.
But he's a biological creature.
He's still
this,
biological.
Again,
yeah.
is a statue with a ghost in it.
That's right. This is our first ever statue with a ghost kaiju cast.
Purely spiritual kaiju.
Our first golem here on.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you guys ready for the break a little bit? And then we'll do that.
Take a little break.
Let's break it
take
up.
A little break, come break, back. Break. A little take break. A little talk about movie.
All right. See you after the break, guys.
The monster will destroy us all. Prehistoric monster. The monster will destroy us all.
Monster.
The monster will destroy us all. Prehistoric monster. The monster.
This monster you see. You think your bomb will stop him?
And we're back.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Wow.
Ripping a Band-Aid off. Yeah, so this is the first movie that I picked for this month, and I never actually seen it before, but I had seen a lot of figures of the titular Daimajin, and I always thought he looked super duper cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I did see the very ending once, I think as part of like when old school AMC used to do their monster film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah, so I wasn't really interested in it, and I never had an excuse to watch it, and man, I was hoping to have seen it more times by now, which I'm going to blame on Amazon. I am, of course, blameless. So, yeah, Daimajin came out in 1966, produced by Daiei.
Produced by Daimajin. The monster made this movie.
He was the director, producer, writer, and chief star.
It's Daiko, aka the people who did all the Gamera films.
Yeah.
Same company.
Yeah. I do have a few production-related Tokyo tidbits just before we get into this.
All right.
Some stuff that I liked. This was the first movie of a trilogy.
Okay.
And they used the same suit for every member. Member of the Daimajin family had to share this one suit. It's very embarrassing and sweaty. Yeah, they shared one suit between all three of these movies. And Daimajin is one of the chief influences of Mazinger Z, who in turn influenced Jet Jaguar.
Yeah.
So all things come back to Jet Jaguar.
It also it also explains why multiple times throughout this movie, Daimajin shouts, "Ponch, ponch, ponch."
Yeah, shouts it. It's his only line. Also, it has a soundtrack by Akira Ifukube.
Yeah.
Who you may remember.
I pointed that out.
Yeah. We were literally watching this, and then Kyle's like, I know this music. I know this sound.
Familiar.
Ifukube has a very specific, like...
He really does.
He has a very specific sound to him. So, like, I picked up, like, it was during the... I think it was when the building was on fire.
Yeah.
And it sounded very, like, Destroy All Monsters. Like, and I was just like, this is weird because it's Daiko. And I was questioning it for a second. I was like, well, maybe it's not Ifukube. Maybe it's, like, another guy who did, like, some of the Showa Godzilla films.
Yeah.
And I looked it up and I was just like, nope, yep, nope. It's Ifukube. And, like, even Daimajin's song... Yeah. Like his main theme whenever he's stomping around is very, very like Ifukube.
Yeah.
Like you could sub it in for a Godzilla song and it would be the same.
He really likes his big slow marches.
Yeah, his low brass. Yep. All the
Wah.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, anyway, so let's get to the story real quick. It's a pretty short movie.
Yeah.
And up until the last like 30 minutes, it's got a pretty standard storyline too. Which is, I mean, it's not bad. It's pretty good. It's especially if you're a big fan of 60s samurai movies.
Yo.
Yeah, so it starts out with there's some kind of earthquake going on and everybody's freaking out because their god that lives on the mountain is angry. but a very sneaky, sneaky man uses this opportunity to overthrow his lord in a coup.
Yep.
And take over the... Protectorate.
Yep.
I'm just going to use a different word every time. Because I'm not sure exactly how to classify this village?
Village?
Town?
Fiefdom?
Yeah. So most of the Lord and most of his men are killed.
Uh-huh.
But his children managed to escape.
With one guy.
With one guy.
What's his name?
His name. I'll tell you his name. Kogenta.
Kogenta. That's right. Yeah. That's his name.
Yeah. So the children of Lord Hanabasa are whisked away by Kogenta, his last surviving loyal retainer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the priestess.
And also the priestess shields them in a secret shrine dedicated to Daimajin.
Yes. And you can see him lovely in the back through the cave.
Ever present.
It's in a cave.
With his stone face on.
Yes.
He's got two faces. We'll get into that. So 10 years pass, and they've been living in this secret shrine, the son and the daughter.
In this cave for 10 years.
They've been living in a cave for 10 years, and they've been hunting rabbits. Kogenta, it becomes very clear very fast that he never taught them how to fight or protect themselves. Or just told them not to.
It also
they don't.
Kind of seems like maybe Kogenta doesn't know how to fight or defend himself, because he doesn't do a great job either.
We see him... He takes down a couple guys. He
pulls out a knife.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, when
it's all going down.
But whenever he gets captured, which is about to come up, like he
stabs a few guys. Yeah. Also, but he telegraphs that from a few miles away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not even like standard, because there's usually like a dramatic like, ha, ah, and then they hold the knife up and then bring it down.
Yeah.
This is like he pulls it out and the camera kind of lingers on it for like a full minute. And then he starts stabbing dudes and nobody does anything to stop him. This town is not known for its warriors.
So, as I spoiled for a second, Kogenta gets captured.
Yeah, Kogenta gets captured and... I don't think he doesn't spill the beans about the secret shrine, but somebody sees him and they in turn spill the beans.
Well, no, they basically they go, oh, if you're still alive, the kids must still be alive, too.
Yeah. And they're like, what kids? And he's like, oh,
oopsie. So then they start searching the area where they found him and eventually come across the
prince.
The prince tries to break Kogenta.
Yeah, that's right.
He has like his Metal Gear Solid moment. He sneaks all the way into like the, you know, and they've got flashlights for some reason.
They
can
have
point
ancient
at
feudal flashlights.
Feudal flashlights.
With cables going down to a battery.
Don't worry about the cables. Don't look at those.
But then like it was all just a trap. Like they left Kogenta out in the middle of like the area dangling so they could like catch, you know, hopefully someone else. And they
but
have
that
to
guy
capture
wasn't even Kogenta.
The prince.
Yep.
No, it wasn't.
The guy hanging from a pole.
No, because
he pulled him down.
That's Naku Genta, and then the light was right in his face.
It was like, oh, no. Aha, we stuck up on you.
Anyway.
Oh, you're right. That's the doctor that helped free them. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So then afterwards, they're like, well, let's search the area where you were hiding. And then they find the princess because she leaves a bell behind. And that leads to the first real Daimajin sequence.
Right. Yeah. So, well, actually, right before that, we got to talk about the priestess dying.
Yeah, the priestess, she goes to try and get the super bad guy, whose name is... I wrote it all down because I knew I wouldn't remember. Yeah, so the super bad guy, the newly anointed Lord Samanosuke Odate.
Yes.
Yeah, he's the one who sees control. So she goes and she's like, hey, you're doing a lot of bad things, which he is. He set up some kind of bizarre mining operation.
Like, like a working camp for something. Yeah, like,
where they're just moving.
They're building a giant statue of him. I don't know.
They're also not allowed to pray to their god.
Don't pray to your god. So. I'm very upset about that. Pray to me. But yeah, it seems like in their mind, all they do is move boulders from one place to another and get beat.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So she's like, you gotta... I wouldn't do this if I were you. It's taken me 10 years to get up here.
Yeah, meanwhile, she's trying to convince him to let the kid go.
Yeah.
And what's his name? What's his name again? I'm going to forget the guy's name. Kogenta.
Yeah, Kogenta and the child. And she's like, if you do this, God's going to be real angry. And he's like, whatever.
You're not.
And she, like, he...
slices her.
Yeah, he gets real mad and he cuts her up real good. Before she dies, she gets the real spooky backlighting.
Yeah.
And where, like, basically lays a curse on
the entire world
him.
Around her grows dark except for her in a bright spotlight.
Yes.
That's the way I would describe it.
And yeah, she delivers what I thought was a super cool monologue about just the wrath of this ancient god will be laid upon you.
Yeah.
And he is unaffected.
Yeah.
Everybody around him thinks it's real spooky.
And then he decides, like, okay, go destroy the statue.
Yeah, he's like,
which is when they find the princess.
Yeah, go blow up the statue. And on their way to blow up the statue, they find the princess. They're like, hey, show us where the statue is. And by blow up, I don't mean blow up because they don't have explosives.
Yeah. They have hammers.
I mean, they have gunpowder because they have guns.
They've got muskets.
So...
But gunpowder is very expensive at this time.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
But they fire those guns like nobody's business at the end. Anyway.
Well, the Lord does to show his excess. This is
good
nothing
point.
To me.
Good point.
Yeah.
So the big first Majin moment happens
Our first big Majin moment, because they're trying to hit him with hammers and they realize, like, wait a minute, this is a solid stone statue. This isn't going to work. Bring me a chisel, which I'll put right in his forehead. They nail it in 2 times. Blood starts running out of it, which is universally acknowledged as being super cool. They get all freaked out, and then suddenly a great wind and lightning and the earth opens.
And
they all fall into it, and there's like a creepy green light shining out of it, and then it just closes on top of them.
Yep.
And it's very good.
It eats all the people.
Yeah.
So I guess what's after that? So it's now the morning, and the people are Kogenta and the prince guy are about to be executed.
Seconds away from being executed.
Yeah. And so she goes to pray for the statue.
She's
to do
like, please. And he's just sitting there with a thing in his head.
Yep. No.
And she's like, I'll kill myself if it'll work.
And then
she
says
it twice.
Okay,
fine.
And then he gets up.
Yeah. And we have the really cool sequence of him, like, waking up and, like, does the...
Yeah, he...
he moves his hand in front of his face, and his face, which was a rock with, like, a very
like
tiny
a stone
little...
mask, becomes a very angry, like, sort of the
Kabuki-style...
iconic Kabuki-style Daimajin face.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Oni face.
Yeah.
Is the way I would describe
somewhere
it.
Somewhere between...
It's the ultimate frown.
Yeah. We'll talk about that when we get to creature design.
Yes.
In air quotes.
So, the next, like... 30 to 15 minutes of the movie
is
just him just going buck wild on this town.
It's the giant monster moment of this movie.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's here to save us. And then it turns out, well, kind of.
No, he's not.
Because he shows up and, man, this is where it finally becomes like a Tokusatsu Kaiju movie. Like, the town is just, oh, man, incredible miniature work of just these buildings just being pulled down.
Yes. Yeah, some really cool stuff going on
Really cool stuff. He's a big fan of the overhand chop. Yeah. He does that a bunch.
It's like he moves, like he always moves with purpose, which I like.
Yeah.
And so like, but he like raises his hand above his head and just like holds it there for a second and then just goes, like moves his hand down and just chops
and then
into the building.
Just devastation. Yeah. He can also sort of emit these big gusts of incredible wind, like typhoon winds.
I feel like that's just him in general. Like there's just always a constant
storm of wind around him.
Yeah.
He can definitely direct it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah,
because he does it when he gets surrounded by fire.
Yeah, they're surrounded by fire, which... Guys.
Fire against the stone statue.
Fire against stone? You guys got to play more Pokemon. Come on.
So one of the things I really like about the sequence that I didn't really pick out when I was watching it, but you guys both brought up, is that he acts a lot like a cat.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
he'll put his hand up and like put it right next to something and like then like look at the evil feudal lord.
Just wait until the evil feudal lord will
like be like, oh, no, and then he just like knocks over the building and then just stares at him and then keeps grumpily walking through.
Yeah. Oh my.
Yeah.
I can't overstate how cool the last third of this movie is.
So like it ends with him basically like takes the stake out of his head.
Yeah.
The big giant rock chisel.
And just impales the, like nails this dude to like the beam of his castle.
Yeah.
Which is all that's left of his castle.
So there's one little cool thing there that I didn't mention while we were watching. So at first he tries to string up the prince and Kogimta on these crucifixes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the very, very end, the big piece of wood that he gets like pinned to with a rock chisel is cross-shaped.
Yeah.
So he like, you know, gets
it's very the same.
It's very eye for an eye.
It's the imagery type thing.
Which spirit of vengeance.
Man.
But a giant rock monster.
Yeah. Here's the thing though. His good work done, he returns peacefully to it. Nope. He continues to destroy the town and kill almost indiscriminately.
Yes.
The only people he doesn't immediately kill are the direct blood relatives of Hanabasa. But man, like he steps on a lot of people and
grabs one guy and throws him, and you hear the sound effect of flesh being pierced by something sharp.
Yeah, like it's clearly like his hand like crushing into the guy's flesh.
Oh, it's real gross.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't show like, you know, it's not
there's not gory or anything like that really.
Oh, it's implied.
It's a lot of implied gore. Yeah.
Because of the implication.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he's about to step on this kid. Who is the one that got the daughter in, kind of involved in this in the first place?
Yeah.
But she throws himself on. She throws herself on him. She throws Daimajin on top of the child. She throws herself on top of the child, and Daimajin's foot just kind of stops.
Yeah.
And
then she starts crying, like saying.
She immediately
like,
is just like, "Please stop! You can kill me if it'll stop all of this." She wants to die.
Apparently,
she's done.
She's really.
She's lived in a cave for ten years.
Yeah.
I mean,
but yeah. Then it is revealed that only an act of kindness can stop Daimajin's rampage.
Yeah, and then a weird ghost spirit like does some loop de loops.
Yeah, the spirit leaves the statue, and the statue crumbles into kind of a sand.
Yeah,
yeah. And it ends with a shot of the sand.
Yeah,
and it says the end.
Just this pile, and then it's like the end.
We don't see them like rebuild or be happy. It's just like, oh well, he left now. Okay, cool.
Well, at least he didn't kill us.
Well, we barely survived.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story is be good or else. It has a very.
He really is Santa Claus.
He really is. He's Santa Claus.
How fitting we're watching this in December.
He's Santa Claus and Krampus at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's not just depriving you of a reward. As possible, it's like negative reinforcement. I will nail you to your house. It's very old world European folktale
in that way.
It's just like, hey, be good or this horrible monster is gonna break your knuckles.
Sorry, or else.
So how do we want to do this? Because I don't really have I don't feel like I have enough of an opinion to do least favorite or favorite moment other than the final sequence.
Let's just name our personal hypest moment. In that final sequence, there's one bad moment I want to talk about that I dislike. Overshadowed in my head.
Yeah. So, and it's right before the movie kicks off into real Daimajin action. So
the kid
who's been kind of like hanging out with like the royal family that got hidden away.
His name is Take.
Take.
Mr. Taco returns.
Direct ancestor.
Oh my god. That's why
he was so interested in Kong.
He's like, listen, we have to get money. Like, we can never be poor again, otherwise we're gonna get wrapped up in
Let
this.
Let me tell y'all a story.
Let me tell you of the old country. So he's running through this forest after he's been separated from the royal princess, and he's like freaking out. He's and like this like skeleton hand touches him, but it's not really a skeleton hand. It's just a branch, and like, you know, there's some neat camera
tricks.
It's
supposed to be the kid like freaking out because he's in the forest.
He's in
alone.
A scary forest.
Like most of it's all like, oh, he's freaking out. He sees something.
Like he sees the big, bad god thing from
and
the.
And then like it cuts away for a second and cuts
and
back,
it's a tree.
And then it's just a tree. A skeleton hand touches him, and then like he knocks it away and runs up, and it pops back up, and it's just a branch. But then there's this one little bit where they spliced in a bunch of like animals
chewing.
Bleeding,
it's
like chewing.
It's super
and
close-ups
blinking.
Of like a goose's eye. There's a
camel's
mouth and...
or a goat. I couldn't tell if it was a camel or a goat.
It was one of the two.
It looked like a camel to me.
It was just, but yeah, they just show
expert
like,
of camels, Cameron.
This super bizarre like quick cut flashes, and they never do it anywhere else. And it's just like they saw The Exorcist. No,
not
the Exorcist. Couldn't have been out by what they're. No. They must
they
have
just,
been trying
they just
to be like
wanted to be
what
freaky.
Something spooky and weird. A farm animal scare me, and then everyone looked at the director like what?
They do, and he's like, yes,
they're filthy, they're disgusting.
Now continue with the work,
and then he like you know
that's probably the weirdest, just like out of place. Like that, like I said, like I think the skeleton hand and the tree stuff, like that's kind of cool because
that's
like
fine.
I mean that's how stories of monsters in forests get started anyway. Somebody
absolutely.
Goes into a forest, freaks out and sees something weird, and they're just like, oh, there's creatures,
I gotta tell everybody about this.
But like the weird cuts, which I'll talk more about cinematography in a second because I have some stuff to say about that. But yeah, favorite moments in the final sequence, in the actual giant monster section of this movie.
Okay,
what is your favorite section, your favorite thing that happens?
I feel like we run the risk of overlap because it's such a short sequence, but I also think that there's enough cool stuff
I think
for
there
us
is.
To get one if we accidentally take one from somebody else.
So I'll let you go, Cameron. This
Cameron,
is yours,
go first.
You go first.
This was my project.
it sounded so sad. This was my project.
This was my grim work. I'm a big fan of miniature work, and this movie probably has my favorite miniature work of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Particularly. Yeah.
Well, okay, I know one better than this, but I'll wait.
How dare you, first off. Majin is, you know, on his rampage, he actually like breaks through the gates so easily. They don't even slow him down. They get this idea. They're like, hey, you remember that really old movie, Empire Strikes Back? And they rig up some chains to try to trip him up.
You mean that movie in the future?
Yeah, you know that really old movie from the far, far future?
It was a Civil War reference.
I know, I got it.
There was this movie that came out a while back. Spider-Man was in it.
Yeah.
You should see it. It's good. So they try to, they get some big, big iron chains, and they're going to trip him up, which has a couple of problems. One, he's been proven to be completely unstoppable.
Yes.
Two, he's very bottom heavy. He's built like a pyramid almost. But the main thing is, so he walks through and they kind of lift the chains up, which somehow get wrapped around his arms. I don't get that. But
it wrapped around like his waist, and his arms were down, and
that's
then he just
kind of
like
kind
raised
of, like,
his arm.
Raised his arms to pick them up, and he like kind of looks for a second, which again, moving with purpose, very, very good. Yeah, he flexes, kisses his guns.
and then just continues to
and then he just like, and just kind of keeps walking forward.
Yeah.
And the buildings that they had tried to chain him to just implode.
Yeah.
Like, they just follow him like dogs on leashes.
Splintering wood, tearing, it looks really, really good.
Yeah. Dudes get buried in the rubble. There's lots of...
It looks really cool.
It's so good.
I'll go next. It's one a really cool moment, but I actually have a slight complaint about it, but I'll talk about that in a second. So it is the fire moment when they, like, for some reason, they're just like, we got surrounded with fire. Maybe it'll stop him.
You know what?
So
they're not thinking clearly.
They're trying
everything. This is the scariest thing that's ever happened.
The reason why I like this sequence so much, and it goes into the monster design when we talk about that in a second, is, like, he stops inside of the like right at the edge of the fire.
They've made a fire
barricade. And just kind of looks from side to side for a second, and then like focuses his eyes onto the guy that he's trying to kill, the villain, and just stares at him for a second. and then raises his arms to like cross over his chest, and then immediately just like flings them downward, and the wind like just gusts out and knocks all the fire away. I love that so much. I feel like the concept of it is so much cooler than how it looks in the movie, though, when the fire goes out. Because it just kind of like, you don't, like, because it's just the wind that's already there.
You know, so everything's missing is a big whoosh sound.
There's yeah, no like a sound, sound. Effect. Yeah. Or like, or just, or like a slight carts, effect of
the
it.
The carts being knocked over.
Right.
Like, should have been bigger.
The fire got blown and like knocked at, into like the like guys who were trying to hide.
Fire or something, or like.
That would have been like way more impactful. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, but the, just the motion, like that's one of the coolest motions from the creature in that shot. Mm. It's like, I just love it because he looks down at the fire and just like looks straight at the guy and almost looks like, really? And just like crosses his arms.
Do you see what my arms and body are made of?
Yeah. I thought it was, yeah, like, no, I thought it was, that was super great.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that I wish they'd added a whoosh sound. I think it does kind of add to, he does his whole big assault in complete silence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't roar or groan or say anything. It's just, there's no sound comes from him other than like heavy thudding footsteps.
Yeah. I kind of have two.
Okay.
There's two moments in this film that I think are really, really neat.
Okay.
The first is absolutely phenomenal, considering like the age of the film and like, you know, what they did. And it's all the practical effects and all the spooky ghost work that goes into Daimajin first, like waking up. Like before, like when he first gets the stake in his head and he wipes out a whole army without moving.
Without moving.
Like the like floors ripping apart and there's rot and like mud slides and there's all this like, you know, environmental destruction and like spooky lights that look, you know, almost like Raiders of the Lost Ark style.
Yeah.
Like weird, eerie lights floating through, and you know, it's just a haunted forest killing this army.
Right.
And it's really, I really, really, really liked that. And then to cheat a little bit, I actually do like the prayer sequence where like there's the whole tribe is getting together to try and pray for Majin to not
please don't wake up. Please
to
don't
pray
wake
for
up.
Majin to not wake up. Yeah.
Because they don't have anyone for him to destroy. So it would just be them.
Oh please. So those were that's cheating a little, but I liked those two moments. I thought they were very, very like interesting visually to watch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, you want to talk about Majin? We've been
talk about Majin.
Yeah, let's talk about Majin. But I mean, let's just talk about both forms. There's not really two forms.
Yeah,
it's just
there's
one face, another face.
There's one two has faces. A rock mask with a tiny little mouth, and then one is Olmec.
He looks like Legends of the Hidden Temple. Some of you aren't going to get this reference. Whenever he has the tiny mouth, he looks like what are they called? Gyroids or whatever from Animal Crossing. The wood
kinda.
Yeah.
Oh man! Wow.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
That's what his face looks like. Yeah. He looks like, I mean, how would you describe his general look? I mean, he's like just like a man statue.
Yeah,
with
he
like,
looks like an effigy made in the hundreds.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's designed like, it looks like they carved into a mountain a statue of a samurai warrior.
Yeah.
And he's got like, you know, the big stone looking samurai armor. He's got a big old pointy helmet.
And it's armor from...
Yeah, you had a Tokyo tidbit about this.
Yeah, so it's kind of... I haven't confirmed this, but I think it's... I'm going to assume that it's true, because I feel like it's...
Tokyo tid...
Guess-ish?
Tokyo theory? I don't know.
Ooh!
So there is a ancient, hilariously old armor coat.
Yes.
And this is from, like... Humans have crossed the sea between China and Japan, and they've been on the Japanese islands for maybe a few centuries.
Okay.
And it is basically a lamellar armor. It's a coat of overlapping squares of stone.
Ah, okay.
And that looks... It has lineage that is shown in the terracotta warriors in China.
Yeah.
And are... I think a very clear influence on Majin's whole look,
uh-huh.
Like, I think they're trying to sort of anchor him to that time.
Yeah.
Also, instead of a katana, he has a very short, almost little like saber. Saber thing. It looks very... Yeah.
Which he doesn't use.
It's just kind of built, built into his arm, like his suit.
There's no way he would ever need that. He's... But yeah, it's very... They've dated him to a time way before what we think of when we think of, like, ancient Japan.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Which I think is really neat, and I wish they would explore that era more in movies.
So, yeah, no, I agree. So he's like completely just actual stone when we first see him inside the cliff.
He's and a then, prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when he wakes up, he like, as we said, he like throws his hand in front of his face.
Yeah. He passes a forearm over his face.
And his face changes.
Yeah.
And when his face changes, the rest of his armor changes too. Because then it starts, it looks like the blue, like the, if you look up the picture of Daimajin, that's what it looks like. It's like a bluish black armor.
It's the actual suit as opposed to like a, like the carved out statue that they
It looks so less like stone and more like iron.
Yeah.
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 And he's got this green like oni orcish face.
It's very kabuki theater.
It's very kabuki. Yeah, like it his he doesn't have a mouth that moves, like we said. He doesn't make noise, he doesn't do anything.
But all he does is look.
That's the thing, that's what I was about to say. That's the thing they nailed with this was the eyes and how they made them just the perfect level of sunken into the face mask that they like, they just like, whenever they look, there's such a menace that you get from them. So much intelligence and like.
What just, really makes them stand out is that it's a deep bluish green, you know, face.
Yeah.
And then with the white pupils of the eyes and the, you know, black irises moving around, it just looks super, you can see every twitch that the eyes have.
And they're set really, in, they're just far, they're not. Yeah, the like mask is thick enough that it doesn't look like a dude in a mask, but you can still very clearly see the eyes and where he's looking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It, ooh, it's so good.
It doesn't. Yeah. That's what I would say is like, I feel like with the way it looks, it doesn't look like a creature inside of the armor. It looks like a whole creature. Like that is just what the creature looks like.
Yeah.
The mask, it's not a mask. It's literally, that's just its face. Like, that's what its face looks like.
Here's something weird I found. So you guys know those cross sections that came out in the show era? There's one for Godzilla, there's one for Gamera.
Yeah.
They made one of Daimajin.
Yeah.
Which showed that he has internal workings.
Ah.
But they're like organs made of stone and like a weird furnace, but also a kind of nervous system.
That's weird.
A ghost nervous system.
Yeah, I can only imagine, because the cross-section has his awakened face.
Uh-huh.
So, I can only assume that the ghost possessed the statue and then sort of created this weird system of nerves out of ectoplasm and then just kind of wore the statue like an Iron Man suit.
That's so cool. So, okay, so I brought this up when we were watching it. I think it's a really good point. So, you guys weren't there for that episode, but we did War of the Gargantuas back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not a big fan of the War of the Gargantuas, like, faces. Like, the way that they did, just the costuming of the face just didn't really make sense to me.
They're stuck in one emotion.
Like, yeah, they are stuck in one emotion. But the biggest problem is like, the stuck in one emotion works for this. Because it doesn't, its face doesn't change. But it didn't work for them. And I feel like, I don't know, not to speak ill of Nakajima, but, like, I wonder if, like, it's just the way that the suit actor did the eyes and, like, was able to really emote through the eyes so much that, like, I feel like it really made a big difference. Whenever the face doesn't move, if there's still that one emotive part of the body, it makes a huge difference. And I think that this humanoid suit did not have the problems that I had with Sanda and Gaara back.
I think I know exactly why. So Sanda and Gaara both have one face.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always match up with their body language.
Yeah.
Because they are essentially giant apes, and the actors try to move like giant apes. Mm-hmm. And I really like the way they move, but it does conflict with their faces. In this one, because he's so intentionally stiff, his body language is always tense, always angry, and it always matches that face no matter how he moves.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that. But yeah, and his movement is like you were just saying now to segue, like his movement is just so perfect. Like, it's so purposeful. It's always like he gets hit by stones and he doesn't flinch necessarily, but he just kind of like
looks like, who did that?
Yeah, like,
stop that.
Seriously, stop that, guys.
Look at me.
You're wasting your time.
You're not doing anything here.
Just go.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I liked... We talk about, like, monsters' reactions to, like, things hitting them and stuff a lot on this podcast. And I feel like this movie did a very good way of making a creature that is imperviable mm-hmm. and is not being hurt by anything throwing at him, but still reacting to what is being hit. You know, when he gets hit by the rocks, he still looks down and, like, looks at what's throwing the rocks at him.
Yeah.
And with his eyes, once again.
He's doing a no-sell, like the Undertaker.
Yeah. I was actually just about to say, like, he's doing, like, the ultimate Undertaker face where, like, he'll get hit by a punch and he'll
just, he's doing,
like,
the dead man. He's doing the Broly from the first two movies.
Where, well, like, the third movie doesn't count. So.
He realizes what's happening. He just doesn't, like, ow. There's, like, it's not having any physical impact. He's just like,
Yeah. I mean, he's real cool looking. I really enjoyed it. Like, I mean, that it made, like we were watching it, and I literally was like, this movie is not anything special, like, at all. And then, like, the way the suit is and the scene plays out at the end made the whole movie worth it.
Yeah,
like, it's not that the beginning of the movie was bad. We'll get more on this in the final thoughts. I just feel like the final sequence with the suit, the tokusatsu stuff,
makes the whole movie.
It escalates that movie to being something special, something worth telling people to watch.
Yeah.
But anyway, anything less to talk about the suit? Or do we want to move on to cinematography and special effects?
Let's do cinematography, because I think there's a lot actually to talk about.
There's a lot of really good shots.
Yeah.
So I brought it up while we were watching it, and I think I still stand by it. This is definitely a weird transitionary between the 60s to, like, more modern era filmmaking, whereas, like, in the 60s and 70s even still, there was a lot of just, like, static camera shots where the camera just stays. In this movie, they started moving the camera a lot to some funny effects when they try and do a handheld shot. Oh. And, like, you know, like, Rob acted it out while we were watching it. Like, those cameras are not light and they're not small. So, like, clearly they were, like,
this 120-pound camera.
And you can see that in the way the camera moves. But I mean, I do appreciate the ambition of trying to do that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, I think it was one of those transitionary things, because, like, there were a lot of moving camera shots that are, like, camera moves that you're not supposed to do.
They have a crane shot in this.
Yeah.
Where it's like the first, like, sequence where they're doing, like, they're dragging
when
all
you see the slaves, yeah,
where they're pulling in stuff to make, like, a statue or something.
It's the first time we're checking in with the village after the 10 years. And
yeah, by the way, there's
West's
a time jump.
We said that there's a 10-year time jump.
Okay. We said there was a time jump.
Okay, I missed that.
We normally glaze right over.
But so at first it's a static shot just looking down. I was like, this is kind of a bad camera angle. It's, like, super close, and, like, you can just see, like, two of the carts moving.
Yeah.
And then it swoops down and up to look over, which now we do all the time with dolly shots, mm-hmm. right? But this was the one of the oldest movies I've seen do it in, like, a really natural way.
Yeah.
You can tell, right, like, the apex of the swing that, like, the cameraman's like, come on, like, holding it as the, like, you know, like, the crane or whatever he's on starts to swing back
pull up.
But, like, you know, once it, like, gets up enough, like, it, you know, fans out over the entire, like, torture pit
where they're
having them do all this mining.
And it shows a really, like, sort of, like, guides your eyes up this long winding path up to the big castle.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
I really liked that shot. And I mean, I already gushed about how great the opening sequence of Daimajin waking up and all the spooky.
No, yeah. And I mean, I think that, like, it's not bad cinematography at all. It's actually really good in some places.
Yeah.
And then some places it's just like I said, if it looks bad, it's just, it's clearly like they were trying something new.
They took a chance.
And sometimes it didn't work out. Sometimes it worked out great.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one shot, right after the 10-year gap where it's the waterfalls.
Yeah.
Like, where it's the first, like, the camera's at the very bottom. You see her, like, washing or something. And then you see the statue in the very, very far distance. It's a really nice shot.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if that was, like, an actual location that they shot it in Japan,
yeah,
or if that was like multiple tiered sets of like, here's a set for this, we're going to film this with the other thing in the background, yeah, superimposed. But it looks great. Like that, they use that shot a couple of times when the bad guys show up.
Yeah.
The first time they see the statue, it's the same shot.
Yeah. But seeing the statue, like there's a lot of very, very pretty shots in this. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like, because, again, that camera weighs as much as the car that Rodan was stuck in. But, like, you know, like, they do this really cool, like, they set the camera up and they're like, you know, we're going to make this frame a painting and have the characters move within it. Mm-hmm. And I really, really appreciated that throughout this whole movie.
Yeah.
There, and, like, the shots where it doesn't work are shots where, again, they were trying to take a risk.
Yeah, and it just didn't quite get there.
Like, the handheld camera, when we first, you know, follow the cave. Yeah, yeah, enter the cave where like the prince and the princess are going to be hiding. The cameraman, this is where I got up and like started acting it out. Yeah. But like the cameraman tries to walk in and is trying to like point at, like, to, yeah, the inside. He's trying to like
look at the stuff.
It's trying, yeah, to be a very natural sort of like, I've walked into a cave. Let's,
yeah,
look over here.
Look,
yeah,
over there.
Let's look over here.
Yeah. But it comes across as like the cameraman's like, come on, and he's like barely manages to make it look to the left, yeah, slightly, and then like it like lumps back down, and it's just like super jittery, and like, yeah, I was like, oh, they tried.
So it becomes a very natural, I've walked into a cave, let's look over here, let's look over there. But if you're like a newborn baby and your head weighs 150 pounds.
But yeah, so as far as the cinematography goes, I think that was really all I had to say about it. It's just like, there's some cool stuff, there's some weird stuff, but it's okay.
There's some,
it's okay.
There's some very good screenshot fodder.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah. Particularly when he's just about to nail the dude to the,
yeah,
to the, you know, the ruin stake. Yeah, it's just, it's almost from the bad guy's perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get the very menacing face, raging, this almost like psycho-esque pose, yeah, of him with this big,
yeah,
chisel that he yanked out of his own forehead to,
yeah,
for the sole purpose not of to, killing this man.
Not to get too gory, but like that, and this is a weird reference, but that scene reminded me a lot of the beginning of God of War 3.
Oh, yeah.
When you're killing Poseidon at the very, yeah, beginning. Like, and you're looking at Kratos coming, yeah, at you from Poseidon's point of view, and it's terrifying. You're just like, whoa!
Like, oh, I don't think I'm the hero in this one.
Ah, shucks.
Uh-oh.
But anyway, so yeah, as far as special effects go, I mean, we talked about, like, the practical effects are amazing. I don't think there's a bad practical shot in the film. Now, what there is, and this is something we haven't talked about, is the scale of the Majin kind of fluctuates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's got
a lot. So I thought he was a lot bigger in my head because I had seen clips from this.
And yeah, to be fair, sometimes
he is. Yeah. Because like whenever they're first crawling on him to try and dismantle the statue, like I was like, oh, he's smaller, yeah, than I thought he was.
Like his head is about the size of
a person. Yeah. Yeah. But then when he's storming the castle, he's like
8 feet tall.
Yeah, like
sometimes.
No. 8 to 10
sometimes
feet tall.
He's 8 to 10 feet. And then other shots when he's like the full bodied,
yeah,
in the,
he's towering
castle,
over the building.
He's like 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
And then when he's reaching into the castle to grab the bad guy,
he's like 6 feet tall.
One hand is Kong and then one hand is a very large man. And then you see the hand again, and now
and
it's
ape.
Like,
yeah, now it's ape sized.
And then over here now it's like Bumblebee.
Yeah, it's he fluctuates. That is, yeah, I would say that would be, if I had to pick a special effect that doesn't really work very,
yeah,
well, it is the fact that he fluctuates in size.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it's fine. Like, it, yeah, doesn't take you out of it too much. It's just, like I said, it's just a little weird,
yeah,
that they, there's not much stock footage.
Yeah.
No.
There's,
it's hard to
there's
find
two
stock
shots,
footage of.
There's two shots that they repeat right after each other, and it's the fire cart when they're pushing them down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it literally is just, like, the same cart twice in a row, and it's just like,
I caught it.
Only had one cart, I guess, to push, and you had to film it once and use it again.
Fire is expensive, okay? This was 1960s Japan. You think fire grows on trees? They got to make do with what,
wait,
they got.
God, I hope it doesn't.
Wait. But no, I mean, the special effects are great. I know Cameron said that it's the best of the 60s, 70s. I would say it's the best of the 60s, not the 70s.
I'll say it's my favorite of the 60s and 70s.
I would still disagree.
Hey.
punch, punch, punch.
Let's say we settle this like gentlemen. Pistols at Dawn. But
there's a little movie that is behind Rob's left side That has some really...
This came out in 2014.
Yeah.
The other one.
Well, that came out in 1989.
His left side. I said his left side. That's on his right.
Well, that's a hypothetical scene from a movie that came
out in 1989. Anyway, we'll talk about that after the cast. So music, there's really not much to talk about, I would say, with the music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Ifukube. It's not bad Ifukube. It's not like the same theme gets used over and over again. Like,
but it doesn't really stand out.
It's not. But I mean, I think that's kind of the kind of movie it is, though. Like, yeah. I mean, because it is kind of more of a feudal. Like, I mean, there wasn't really any big music.
It works.
And, yeah, it works for what it is, and yeah. It, you know, it's not. It's definitely one of those scores that's just there to be the background sound. You know what I mean? Like, it's not supposed to be, like, the big bombastic Godzilla theme. And even Daimajin's theme, as cool as it is, it's not really, like, the big bombastic.
It's downplayed
like,
a little bit.
It's downplayed, yeah.
The loudest noise in the entire film is the Takeru kid.
Take,
Mr. like, screaming, help me, help me, let go of me, when he has a skeleton hand on his back.
Well, okay, the loudest noise in the entire movie is all the kids.
Yes.
They all thought they had to yell.
It's really, like, because I was just, like, I had the volume at, like, what I thought was a normal setting, and, like, you know, there's...
Yeah, it was fine for
everything
else.
And then all of a sudden, as soon as the kids started screaming for help, it's like, and, like, I had to throw my headphones off.
Blow out all the windows.
glass shattered.
But, yeah, I mean, there's not really much to talk about with the sound. I mean, there's one thing I want to talk about, then we can move on to final thoughts, because I think we can move on there.
Let's hear it, Kyle.
Was the cool little, at the opening, we all commented on it, and then we never said anything again about it. The eye at the beginning of the rock.
Yeah. They have an eye kind of overlaid in... It's not the eye of Daimajin. It's just a piece of... It's just a part
of rock.
This natural rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the shadow makes it look kind of like an eye socket.
And it's a cool little foreshadow type to Daimajin at the end.
It's really good.
I thought that was really cool.
That was
really
well done. Yeah. I kind of wish that, you know, like there was spooky stuff like that instead of like goats and camels and ducks.
Yeah, more
don't
eyeballs.
Forget about the ghosts.
And the ghosts.
The overlaid. Like, the
Kleenexes. Kleenexes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know when you were a kid and you had to like make ghosts and you just like
you
balled them up and rubber banded it. And yeah.
Well, Kyle, what you do is that you take a tissue and then you rubber band it over a lollipop.
There you go. That's it.
And then you give it to the rest of the kids in the class because your mom's making you.
Yep. That's it. That's the one.
So I guess we're into final thoughts.
Yeah.
I think my final thoughts are very clear. I do want to say that my favorite part of the movie is the final sequence. So I guess you could go on YouTube and just look up the final battle sequence, but I really think you should watch the whole thing. I think that it really adds to it when you're just, you know, you sit here and it goes in between moments of, wow, this bad guy's really bad, and I want our heroes to succeed because they haven't yet. They fail
keep
constantly.
Failing, yeah.
And you just want something good to happen for them. But also, it's really gratifying if you're just waiting for something to happen, because, man, do things happen. And I do like how it's not like Showa Godzilla. Daimajin is not necessarily a hero. He is...
No.
He's very Gamera through Gamera. Like,
he's a wrathful... He's literally a wrathful god. He may be the good god, because I was confused about that for most of the movie at the beginning.
He's good. He's pretty much good.
Yeah. He's good. He's just not... what you would necessarily define as
his
good.
Target is evil. Let's put it that way.
He wants to kill the bad guy.
Yeah, he's the Punisher.
There you go.
He's killing a bad guy.
That's
it's just
good,
that he's also killing a lot of other people who aren't necessarily bad. Like, oh man. Like, so there are clear rules for him, which again is very fairy tale, and I really like that. Which are, he cannot be stopped by any means until he has completed his objective. And witnesses an act of kindness. So if you're trying to get him to stop and use something really nice behind him, no, won't work. He's got to be looking. He's got to see it.
I'll go next. Yeah. I think that I kind of say what you actually said in yours, in the sense of, like, I feel like you can just watch the end scene of this movie and be satisfied. I think that the problem is that, like, the beginning part of this movie is, like, literally... every movie we've ever seen.
It really drags, and it's all so familiar.
It's so familiar. Like, you could honestly, no, I take that back. if you want to watch this movie, don't watch the beginning of a part of the movie. Start it from when they're trying to break the statue.
Yeah.
If you start it from that point and you keep watching it from that point, you will be entertained.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have about 30 to 45 minutes of entertainment.
Yeah.
You'll be done. You won't be lost either because it's very easy to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And they keep reinforcing how bad the bad guy is.
Yeah.
Like, they mention his coup like 10 times.
Yeah. I feel like it is just like, it is a classic story. And I don't mean to say that classic stories are always bad.
Yeah.
But it just... I don't know. It wasn't engaging. The beginning part of the movie wasn't engaging me. I wasn't interested. I was lost by some of the character motivations, like the kid, and like, was he going to betray them or why he was even there? And I never feel like I got an explanation for that. I said, I mean, the movie itself overall isn't very good, but the sequences with the actual titular creature and also just in the direct scenes that involved the titular creature.
Yeah.
Like I said, the whenever he's even still just a stone statue and the world goes to heck when they start trying to break him. That was really intense and really cool and like a
very,
really good.
Very, very good.
Yeah, very, very good. So it's like, I would never say to avoid this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just would say that you're probably going to be bored for the first 30 to 45 minutes. Then you'll start getting interested once stuff starts going down.
And I don't disagree even.
Yeah.
Like I think that it adds a lot to it in that there's a very good payoff when you've been sitting there for an hour and then things start to happen. Mm-hmm. As a samurai movie, this isn't very good. As a monster movie, it's very, very good, but only about 30 minutes long.
I'm in agreeance. I personally like this style of like samurai flick. I spent a lot of time in high school, like, cause that was my thing. I watched a lot of samurai movies and not a lot of kaiju movies. So, you know, for me, this is kind of like just, you know, like slipping back into, you know, like, so nostalgic, like hammy acting and like a sword slash being flung and no blood, but someone going, and spinning in a circle and then falling down.
It's a spaghetti Western, but like not a good one. It's like a knockoff.
Yes. Yes.
It's a very cheap knockoff that somebody made immediately after Fistful of Dollars came out, and they were like, "Ooh, we can do that real quick."
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just like, it's not, if you are into like, you know, like samurai, like, you know, films, this is like a passable, like the first hour is like passable. It's fine. Yeah. It's not like,
it's fine.
It's not good.
It has not charming, like, moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the fact that the heroes just fail constantly.
Oh, they're really bad.
They don't. Yeah. They don't get it right ever until like the giant monster comes in and saves, like just does it for them.
Quote unquote saves.
Saves, yeah. Air quotes. But like, I can agree that like the best parts of this movie are the giant monster, and that doesn't come in until the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who this movie is for, the final half or the final like 30 minutes is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The full movie is for people that like cannot get enough of samurai movies. Doesn't matter how good or bad they are.
You know what? The final half is especially for people who, it's for you if Empire Strikes Back is your favorite Star Wars movie. It's not exactly a happy ending. Like, it's incidentally happy.
Yeah.
But man, there's a lot of human suffering going on throughout this entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, at no moment is it very uplifting.
I kind of agree with what you were saying on the the final half is for everyone thing. Like, I would agree with you. Like, we talk about, you know, like, should you watch this? Should you not?
Yeah.
I think that the giant monster kaiju, you know, Daimajin section
climax
is like, mm-hmm. anyone will get enjoyment out of it. It's very well filmed, it's very fun, it's cool, like you know, like it's kind of scary, like with the way he moves his eyes and how he's just an unstoppable force.
Yeah,
like it's great. But yeah, the first half is just not a slog, but it's if unless you're into that very specific type of movie. And
it's
even then, if you are into that very specific type of movie, once again, it's passable. It's not like it's great. Like, it's not, you know, just, I don't know. It's just,
I think if I were to have this downloaded on my computer and I were to make a fan edit, I would make like a 45 minute long film, and it would be like the intro credits would be playing over like the prayer sequence where they're, you know, like praying to put their God back to sleep, right? And then it would have like, you know, like 10 years later, and then like I would have some kind of like edited in voiceover or like, you know, just like redub what people are saying or something and just have them say like, oh, like, you know, the king, like an evil king took over this land, you know, this all this stuff, whatever.
Would you be playing every voice?
Yes, obviously.
Clearly.
I mean,
okay, good.
No, I agree with you. Like, you don't even have to go further. Yeah. I totally think, like, the first, literally the first half with the castle being taken over is completely useless.
Yeah.
I really think that, it establishes that there's a Majin. That's pretty much all it establishes. And the bad guy takes over the place.
Yeah.
But you could clearly just say that in a voiceover or just a wall of text, honestly. Yeah.
It doesn't even really establish that the previous lord was a particularly good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly better than the bad guy.
Yeah, like, I feel like... That first scene.
Well, they do. They try and spruce up how good of a person he is because, like, they're like, how can you betray your master? He, like, picked you up off the street when you were in there.
Yeah, but that doesn't say, like, oh, he's treated the poor so well.
I feel like if you were going to really wanted to make this movie good with the samurai stuff, I feel like you would have had to make that beginning sequence longer. Like, it would have needed to be, like, a 2-hour movie with a good section of time before that time jump happening.
Yeah.
So, like, you see the kids as kids, you see them interacting with, Kaneko, whatever his name is.
The bad guy?
Kamikaris.
No, the good guy. The good guy that saves them.
Kogenta.
Kogenta. Kaneko.
Kamiko Vision.
Yeah, Kogenta.
Kogenta. Yeah, like you see
them
the
interact
kids
with Kaneko Vision, and
like,
they are
if
very entertained.
If there had been some establishment of, like, and, you know, like, have the good lord, like, say, like, you're my best guy, like, you take care of the kids when I can't, like...
Oh, we are such good friends.
Like, you know, just have some...
you're
have
so
some,
funny.
Have some character interactions between the people while the... before the lord takes over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then have the lord take over, then we go to the future, and then there's more of an established, like, thing going on.
I will say, I usually complain about ensemble casts.
Yeah.
And even while there is a lot of different characters doing a lot of different things in this, it all plays together into the, like, you know, narrative of, like, there's an evil king who's taken over our land. So there's a main focal point, and all their narratives are kind of tied together underneath that.
Yeah, I didn't feel like there was too much of a problem with that.
So I'm okay. Like, I didn't feel like the number of characters was a problem, which usually I'm like, ugh. And I complain about that a lot. But
All right, so Cameron, want to announce what we're doing, recording next week, releasing in like 3 weeks for all of you listeners?
So
Space Amoeba.
No, that's not my thing. So we are going to be watching my second movie of December and one of my favorite of the Showa Godzilla movies. Because it's so bonkers.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're getting a little psychedelic with this.
We're
going to
get real weird.
People have fish heads in this movie. It's crazy.
There's cartoons. We're going to be watching Godzilla versus Hedorah.
Hedorah!
The smog monster.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm real excited about it.
I'm excited to talk about it. I have a weird past with this movie, so I'm not sure what my opinions are after
I can't wait to hear about that. I can't wait for us to all give up 3/4 of the way through and just go have a psych party on a mountain.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to all take illegal drugs here in this movie just to enjoy it, I think. No, that's not that bad. But anyway.
I think it's genuinely good. And I'll tell you why.
Parts of it are genuinely good, but we'll talk about that next
time. I'll tell you why in 3 weeks.
Ooh.
So Godzilla versus Hedorah is next. The beginning of the episode, we talked about how fan month is in January.
Yes.
So we actually have we know the 8 movies that are up for fan month, but we have no idea what's going to be picked.
Yes.
So it could go weird ways. It could go very serious ways. It could be very interesting.
The list is
it's a roller coaster. The list is diverse.
If this was a Spirograph, man, it would be all over the place.
So look forward to Fan Month. All of you that have been doing Kaiju Incoming, thank you for working with us on this. It's turned out very well. I'm sure we will do something similar again in the future. Maybe a second Incoming or something different that is similar.
Second Impact.
Yeah.
No.
All right. But anyway, so let me do all the bumps. So we got our Patreon. Go to patreon.com. Search for Tokyo Lives. You will find us. There's a lot of cool rewards reward tiers. It really helps us keep the podcast going.
There's our newly established Daimajin reward tier for $13.75. I will dress up in rocks and indiscriminately smash your enemy's things. You do have to pay my legal fees afterwards.
There you go. So it's $13.75 with a little asterisk next to it. Anyway, go to Patreon. We really appreciate the support. Thank you to all of our patrons that we have. You all are awesome. Kyue Toshe, Jesse Hickman, all you guys. I don't have the list in front of me. I'm sorry. I'll name you all next episode. So patrons there, go to iTunes, leave us reviews on iTunes. If you leave us a review, we will read it on the cast. We really appreciate feedback as well as your support, because we want to know how we can get better. We're always doing little tweaks to the podcast to try and be just better in general. Facebook, Tokyo Lives, just search for us, you'll find us. And Twitter, Tokyo Lives, Rob is always posting on there. We are trying to just do more things just to interact with you guys in general. So be looking forward to all that good stuff. Cameron has an article in the pipeline, which will come out before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have something special because this is the 1 year anniversary of the podcast in its current form.
Yay.
So we have something coming out for that. That'll be interesting. Also, a little hint, we have been playing a game called City Shrouded in Shadows. Some of you may have heard of it.
I heard of it.
Look forward to us talking about that in some shape or form.
My favorite podcast told me about that.
We will definitely be talking about City Shrouded in Shadows. I don't know if we'll do an actual episode on it. I don't think it's necessary to do a whole episode on this game specifically. There may be games in the future that we will do whole episodes on. Godzilla PS4 game, I'm looking at you. Just look forward to that. Like I said, we're going to keep covering all the news, and just check out our website, TokyoLivesPodcast.com.
Woo!
So, yeah. We'll see you guys in 3 weeks for Hedera.
Three weeks for Hedera.
Sticky situation.
This is genuine laughter.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Oh, bye. My brain hurts.
Bye, everyone.
All these people trying to run away to safety, and you're
I'm just like, excuse me,
pardon me.
It says right here on Gojipedia.